welcome to the Lakers Lowdown. I'm Anthony Irwin. Today on the show, well, I had planned to have a guest on the Lakers Lounge, somebody I was looking forward to talking to. That fell through way later in the night, into the night, than I would normally prefer. So instead, what I'm going to do is dip into the mailbag to answer your guys' questions. And I am blown away by the number of questions that we have. So let's dive on into it. Again, a reminder, if you want a topic, any topic, especially as we head into the offseason, anything. Like minutes before I started recording this, I was watching The Ultimatum on Netflix. So if you have questions about that, fire away. Screw it. But, whether they're Lakers topics, NBA topics, sports topics, whatever, send them in the form of a 5-star review on iTunes, and I guarantee I will get to them, even if it is on a random, in this case, Wednesday. So this is a We Will Answer Your Questions Wednesday mailbag. So the first one that we get here, though, from Lakers Fedora, and I regret even acknowledging the name, but the question here, or the message here, there are very few forms of NBA media sufferable at this point, but I know I can always count on Anthony to do it right. He and his guests are always very informed, and they do a great job for Lakers fans. Thank you very much for that, and it means quite a bit. The question here, what's the ideal offseason look like for the Lakers? Keeping it realistically, what would you do here? Thanks, and keep up the great work. So I've answered this, in various iterations over, since the Lakers season ended in that Western Conference final sweep in a few different ways. So what I think I'm going to do here is I'll kind of briefly answer the actual question and then offer up an update for how I think things are going to go. So we will start with the direction that I think the Lakers should go in here. And for one thing, you have to bulk up. The Lakers were very small over the course of the season, and way too much of their talent that Darvin Ham trusted was in the backcourt and came in the form of like guys who were 6'4" and under. And that it's one thing if you have that many guys and all of them are like snipers that really bend the defense or really get after it defensively and you can switch and they're physical and all those things. But like a lot of the Lakers small guys weren't really any of that, right? Like Kendrick Nunn is a pretty good shooter, pretty bad defender. Lonnie Walker is a streaky shooter, right? And a streaky defender. Dennis Schroeder gets after it defensively, but he's so small that I don't know that it really matters all that much and is, not respected at all as a shooter. Patrick Beverley, right, was a bad shooter for most of his time with the Lakers and was asked to guard small forwards and that made him a worse defender. So just like all around, like even Austin Reeves is a good shooter, right? Doesn't do it much on volume though. So it doesn't really bend the defense necessarily. And he's not like an imposing defensive presence. And just kind of like D'Angelo Russell, the guy that they brought in and Malik Beasley, right? Both streaky shooters at best, and at worst, not playable in the postseason. So the Lakers had a whole bunch of like resources allocated on guards who, I think Reeves is going to be legitimately good next year. But outside of that, like there just aren't very many guards that I'm looking at like, okay, definitely bring that guy in and the Lakers can definitely plan for that player taking a step forward next year. And I think, while it's certainly extreme to just show all of them the door without a real plan to replace them, I also am perfectly fine with seeing a lot of those guys not in Lakers uniforms next year, with a, more of a move towards bigger, more physical players who, maybe the shooting is just as inconsistent, but the most consistent thing in all of sports is size. That doesn't change, right? And, you know, I think watching Denver dwarf a lot of the teams that they were playing against, it really reminded me of the Lakers playoff run a couple of years ago when they won their championship. Like, when you're bigger and you are at least, like, similarly skilled to the teams that you're playing against, that is a huge mismatch, and it is really difficult to overcome. And, you know, leaning into that identity of being bigger and being, you know, more bruising and really beating the shit out of whoever you're playing against, like, that is the direction that I want this offseason to go in. Now, the second part of that answer, right, is, you know, kind of an updated version on what I'm hearing. Again, I'm hearing nothing but confidence from the Lakers that Austin Reeves is going to once again be in that uniform next year. That hasn't changed, and that has been the most consistent theme of the offseason to this point. So he is going to be back, whether it's on a four-year, $56 million deal, or if it's on like a short-term prove-it type of deal, so he hits free agency next year. That is what is left to be decided upon. But Reeves is going to be back from what I've heard to this point. The other aspect of this is Rui is somebody that the Lakers definitely want back. They really like what they saw from him in the postseason. He is a part of that bruising identity that I just kind of talked about. And I feel pretty confident in anticipating he is going to be back. The same can't quite be said, though, about D'Angelo Russell. I do believe that things are better between him and the organization than they were when the Lakers traded him away the first time. That said, there is just a lot of whispers about how the Lakers felt about the way that he handled injury information at the end of the year. And then on top of that, he was not playable in the Western Conference Finals in a way that really calls into question what he's ever going to be able to do in that spot. I think it's a 50-50 proclamation that he is back with the Lakers next year. And I think it's just as likely that the Lakers basically use him as trade filler either right now heading into the off season or in heading into free agency or at the deadline. I don't see a scenario here where D'Angelo Russell is like a Lakers lifer from here moving forward. The other kind of couple questions here that I'm really interested in is the way that the Lakers handle Mo Bamba, right? Mo Bamba has a contract that has to be guaranteed by, I believe, the 28th. And the draft is on the 22nd or 23rd, and I think it's the 22nd. And I would be pretty surprised if Mo was a Laker past the draft. And I would be outright shocked if Bamba was a Laker next year in any capacity. I just doesn't seem like the Lakers were thrilled with that experience. It doesn't help they got hurt. And even before he got hurt, though, he's still more a theory of a player than somebody I think anybody can confidently rely upon. And definitely not at the number that he's going to be at next year. Malik Beasley is an interesting one because there is still reported interest around the league in his skill set, right? He is still on volume, one of the better shooters in the NBA, but you know, he's the latest example of somebody who shot really, really well elsewhere, arrived in LA, and then didn't. And, you know, that is, you know, something that the Lakers, you know, took note of. And I think that he's probably worth more to the Lakers as a trade piece than as a player. But unlike Bamba, I do think there is a scenario here where the Lakers get more from Beasley than they got last year. I do think, like, the one thing about shooters, right, is, you know, as much as you would like to see them just be kind of plug and play shooters, that's not necessarily how this works. And if in Beasley's case, you know, they try to run sets for him, they try to use him as just like a floor spacer whose gravity, you know, allowed them to do other things. And, you know, over the course of the season, he just kind of slowly but surely slipped into unplayability. And by the way, like, him as a shooter, it has been a fairly steady slide from being like absolutely elite a few years ago to less than elite now. And he's another guy that I would say, I think it's a little bit more likely that he's not a Laker next year than that he is. And it's just kind of a matter of what the Lakers can get for a guy who, is still kind of a project and a little too old to actually be a project. So that's kind of the latest that I'm hearing on those guys. I do know that the Lakers are interested in bringing in a center, whether that is to start next to AD or, just have as an option against Jokic. I would be pretty surprised if they didn't bring in a bigger body just to not be a disaster when AD is on the bench in ways that, like, some of those smaller groups were in that series. The Lakers, I think they also understand that at this stage of his career, LeBron would like a little bit more creativity so that he doesn't have to carry as much of it. So I think they're going to be in on Chris Paul, whether that's via sign and trade or whether that is via, watching Chris get traded and then bought out or just bought out, period. I do think that is a name that the Lakers are keeping close tabs on. So I hope that answered that question, albeit long-windedly, but at least fairly thoroughly. All right, the next question here comes from Kenny P. 1874. The Lakers need to plan on injuries with their stars. They need to build around a team that can reduce playing time for LeBron and AD. Tired of players getting injured. So am I, but at this stage, I don't think there's anything you can do about it. If they can't see it, they are idiots or just greedy for revenue. What do you think? I don't think there's anything like greedy about. It's really difficult, man, to like replace the minutes that would otherwise be filled by LeBron or AD. Like that, it'd be like asking in football, hey, superstar quarterback gets hurt, whether that is, we just saw it kind of with Matthew Stafford, right? He wins the Super Bowl, and his arm isn't quite right, and then his heart, the following season, his arm is not right at all, and that team kind of falls off of a cliff because when you allocate as many resources as it takes to acquire and then pay that quarterback, the backup isn't going to be as good, right? Same goes for pitching rotations, right? And bullpens. And like, that's just how sports go. And if you have injuries to your highest paid players or your highest paid players underwhelm as like Westbrook did, it's really difficult to just kind of piecemeal enough productivity to make up for those things. So, I do think the Lakers are probably, like, there are things that the Lakers can do to make the game easier on those guys, right? Bringing in a center next to AD who is a little bit more bruising so that AD can maybe have a few more minutes where he isn't, like, just absolutely getting beaten to a pulp inside. Bringing in some more creative players to lighten the load on LeBron is something that the Lakers are going to be doing. But like, in terms of, like, planning for injury, that's damn near impossible because LeBron is going to be making almost $50 million. I think AD is making about $45 million. And, yeah, like, you just, in a capped sport, that is impossible to just plan for those guys going down. Now, you can try to load manage, and those games that they miss can be, you know, kind of planned, and you can have a script for how those games might look going into them. But still, like, the team is going to be significantly worse in games where LeBron and AD are not available. And then, like, even while you can load manage, there are going to be some times where those guys get dinged up. So say you, like, go into a season planning for LeBron and AD to play 65 games, and you have kind of like scheduled misses or nights off or whatever, then they get dinged up on top of that, and that 65 game number drops down to 60 or 55 or 57 or whatever. And that's a lot of time to not have your two highest paid stars. So what you have to do is put around them an identity that, or a team that has an identity that obviously is optimized when those guys are around. And then on top of that is like functional, so that you can beat like the dregs of the league in games that those guys miss, right? And can be maybe a little, you know, somewhat competitive in games that those guys miss. And I think that's the path that the Lakers and basically every other team is trying to figure out moving forward. All right, next question here. Question comes from MannyGV24. Been listening to Anthony's content for years, and this podcast is consistently my go-to for Lakers coverage / rants. That's perfect. That's a great way to sum it. It's Lakers coverage, and then also he rants a lot. Since you were pleading for any kind of topic or question for your next episode, I have a random one for you. Years ago, when you were the host of Locked On Lakers, you did an episode with Harrison right after news dropped that Kurt Rambis was actually working for the team. This was around the time Lonzo was drafted, I think. What I remember most is Harrison asking if he could curse on the show and then immediately yelling, "Kurt fucking Rambis? The guy who likes butt pictures on Twitter?" Every time I hear Harrison speak, I think of that episode and his Kurt Rambis rant. Do you remember this at all? I'd love to go into the archives and listen to it again and have a good laugh. So I didn't go back and try to find that podcast episode. I would imagine it's probably titled, like, given like the way that I operate. If it exists, it's probably just titled Kurt Effing Rambis. But I did message Harrison and I did ask him, "Hey, do you remember this at all?" He was like, "I don't remember it," which means like he and I both are kind of sitting here saying like, yeah, I don't specifically remember saying that combination of words, but it also sounds like something we would have said at the time when the Lakers were just, I think the way it all went down was that, you know, we were finding out more about the way that Genie was running the Lakers and how isolated and walled off the Lakers organization basically is. And we found out, like, as part of that, that Kurt Rambis was, like, a high-level consultant and actually carries, like, a lot of weight in the organization. And obviously, Harrison and I didn't really respond very well to that. It also could have been back when we were finding out that Kurt Rambis had a lot of things to say about Frank Vogel as a head coach. And, you know, given Kurt Rambis's record as a head coach, he shouldn't have notes on anybody. And again, didn't necessarily respond perfectly to that situation. But yeah, it did bring about, like, kind of indirectly, some fun coverage that Harrison and I have offered up. And makes me wonder why anybody listens to the show at all. So thank you, Manny, for that question. All right, Captain Matt 8 writes, "Hey, Anthony, wanted to say great work on the pod. Thank you very much. I saw an ESPN post where they stated that since 1979, only Western Conference teams that won a championship were from California and Texas. It then led me to look up total championships by team for the NBA and NFL. Do you think if more of the NBA championships were spread out among teams like in the NFL, that would have helped the NBA to develop more of a larger fan base than just the Lakers, Celtics, and Warriors? So this is a topic that I know I'm going to come back to at some point. One of the numbers that has been making its way around the NBA, this is from Darren Rovell. Justin, the NBA playoffs across ABC, ESPN, and TNT averaged 5.47 million viewers, making it the most watched playoffs in 5 years. The NBA games accounted for 15 of the top 20 most programs among people under 50 since the start of April. And, you know, this is that's without the Lakers and Celtics meeting in the finals. And yeah, I think that number would have been higher. Like, I think Lakers Celtics would have rated higher than Miami Nuggets. But even with that said, you know, the CBA, and I know that I've spent a lot of time on CBA talk, and if there's any way that I want to put Jen to sleep, I just say the three letters CBA in that order and out, just like that, and I get to play my video game. But this new CBA is written in a way that, you know, is really building towards parity. They are really going out on a limb to force parity, mediocrity, whatever you want to call it, on the NBA. And if that is going to be the path that they set forward here, where they want, you know, essentially, it's not quite fair to compare the NBA to the NFL because the NFL plays fewer games and we have just different, very different viewing habits as NFL fans versus NBA fans, where NFL fans will just tune into any NFL football that might take place, or as every NFL commentator says, you know, the National Football League, right? For some reason, they just can't say the acronym. But anyway, if there's any kind of NFL football on, football fans will watch. And some of that is because of the way that we've been trained over the years. Some of that is the way that they make each game seem like an event. Some of it is gambling and fantasy and stuff like that. But like, you know, the NBA is trying to get to a place where they create more games that fans tune into, even if their team isn't playing. And, you know, they're trying to bring in this midseason tournament. They already brought in very successfully the play-in tournament. So between the midseason and play-in tournaments, like, that's a couple tent poles that didn't exist before. It used to be that opening night and Christmas were two huge kind of hallmark games or days for the NBA. But now it seems like the NFL is kind of pursuing Christmas, and that makes things kind of difficult on them. So, yeah, I think for like planning stuff moving forward, I do think the Lakers or the league, there's a 40 and stuff. I do think the league is really working towards parity, so that like 15 years from now, we can look back and say that like we changed viewers' habits and people tune in to more games in general than just their own. The only thing is, there are no examples of that taking place where you have, you know, through organized and concerted efforts, changed viewing habits of millions of people who have watched the league a certain way. And this is a gamble, I think. You know, the league to this point has thrived off of dynasties. It has thrived off of, you know, markets and stars and stuff like that. And it could be, you know, ideally, the league would like to see those viewing habits change. But if not, and you become kind of a master of none, then I don't really know what the next kind of steps forward would even kind of look like, you know? So I know that like talking about ratings and stuff like that, it's a real quick way to turn people off. But here's where I'll say that it's important. you know, we're seeing you know, layoffs across industries, right? And you know, one thing that I've kind of noticed from my vantage point, obviously, with my very hands-on, unfortunately, experience here, you're seeing basketball get affected, baseball get affected, hockey get affected, MMA in at SB Nation, which used to be a huge earner for them in terms of clicks, that got affected as well. So, you know, what isn't getting affected as much is football coverage, right? Football is king when it comes to, you know, ad sales and ad revenue and stuff like that. And ad revenue is basically why a lot of these layoffs are taking place. You know, the click isn't worth as much as it used to be. The podcast listen isn't worth as much as it used to be. Video views, slightly different there, different mathematics that are going in there. But still, like, what it kind of comes down to is, you know, a lot of these companies sell out their slated ad spots for the football season because they know that that is the most viewed sport in the country. And then from there are kind of breadcrumbs for the remaining other sports. And if the NBA wants to get back into, you know, the type of coverage it needs to build the sport and the type of presence in media that they want to be, then it needs to continue to grow. And I know that everybody just kind of like rolls their eyes and doesn't really care about ratings talk. And I was happy to see that we got some like positive ratings stuff in a season that didn't feature the Lakers, the Warriors, the Celtics, the Knicks in the final. We never have to worry about the Knicks being in the finals, but still, that was really good news to me. And it's something that I hope that the league's partners, TNT and ESPN, really take note of, that like fans just want good basketball. They want compelling characters. Sometimes they want new shit too, right? The Denver Nuggets snapped a 47-year drought to win this championship. So I really do hope that ESPN and TNT take these playoffs and this playoff run and present it better than they did, because you tune into ESPN and you have Stephen A. Smith saying like objectively wrong stuff about the NBA and about Jokic and about Miami. And, you know, you tune into TNT and you have Shaq and Chuck and those guys saying objectively wrong stuff. And it's just like this lazy way of presenting the league. And I don't know, you just don't see that with the NFL. And yeah, like the fact that, and look, I'm just going to take people behind the curtain. I'm probably going to piss some people off by saying this, but when you tune into these large national platforms and you hear these people like whining about all-star games being in Utah or in Cleveland or whatever, it's because like they're spoiled and they don't want to go to those cities. They want to go to warm cities for these things. And when you hear those same voices begrudge that it is a team that they haven't spent as much time paying attention to over the course of a season compared to the larger markets, it's not that they actually care about the ratings. It's that like they don't know as much about the Nuggets, and it's really hard to cram before that test. So, yeah, I really do hope that like the league's partners, where you do hear a lot of those voices spewing those easy narratives and easy talking points that come across as very entitled, I do really hope that those partners are forced by the league to rethink the way that they cover this sport. Because even in like this 5-game series between the Nuggets and Heat, it's going to be pretty forgettable moving forward, unless you're obviously from Denver. You had a 8 seed rip through the playoffs to get into that spot. Before that, you had a 7 seed in the Lakers completely turn their season around. You had a Denver Nuggets team headed by this superstar who is now widely considered the best player in the NBA, when a month ago or a few months ago, that just wasn't the case. And shit, a few months from now, that might not be the case again as we see how Giannis responds to Jokic being considered the best player in the league. There's a lot throughout the league to market. And if the league is going to get to a point where they aren't just relying on LeBron and Steph and the Lakers and the Celtics and the Warriors, it is going to be because, in part, its partners, ESPN, TNT, and maybe new partners, right? We have this new TV deal coming up, and maybe that's something that the league should hold over ESPN and TNT. Is like, hey, Amazon is saying that they're willing to cover this league a certain way. They're willing to commit to, you know, better analysis on their daily shows than we get from ESPN. And if so, then cool. That's how the league is going to grow in that way, and that's how markets start to matter less. And yeah, I know I'm speaking from the perspective of somebody who wants to see markets to continue to matter, as that will help the team that I root for continue to be to have a market inefficiency. But the health of the league is hugely important, and this is, I think, how it's going to come about. All right, then the last question here comes from, well, I do have a comment, right? John JF80 says, really enjoy this show covering the Lakers. Thank you very much. But Motor Breath writes, hey, Anthony, not a question, but just a number of thoughts relating to D'Lo I'd love your take on between now and whenever the season begins. I found it exciting when he made his return to the Lakers, and I feel his energy slash play were instrumental to turning the season around. The Like I Never Left game comes to mind. The vibes were infinitely better than with Russ. His playoff performance was spotty and ended badly, but we probably don't go as far as we did without him. I really wanted him to succeed and stick this time. Maybe he still can, but it seems hard to see right now. I agree with that, you know, obviously last sentiment, given what I said earlier in the show, but I also adamantly agree with that, like, the Lakers looked their best when Russell was playing well. That was like, if the Lakers had Russell going, they just weren't losing that night because there were just too many threats. There was obviously LeBron and AD, and Reeves was consistent enough that, like, you can kind of bank on his 15 to 17 points. And then if Russell came in and was hitting those transition threes, it was over. And if he was hitting those transition threes and, like, engaged defensively, it was a blowout, generally speaking. And, you know, that is something that the Lakers, I think, are going to take into account is, you know, yeah, it ended poorly and there were some questions along the way, but it is hard to ignore how good the Lakers did look at times when he had it going and everybody else was really engaged. And then, you know, what is it worth to the Lakers that he played such a central role in turning the season around? That's something that they continue to kind of ponder. As you guys are probably listening to this, they're probably having a meeting about what the hell to do in that regard now that the season is officially over. I also, to be completely honest, would kind of like to see this work out with D'Angelo Russell and the Lakers. Not just because of, you know, the storyline and how much I've enjoyed watching, you know, him buy into the team concept and how much I just liked watching him play early in his career and then really enjoy watching him play when he has it going, but also because, like, that is one fewer thing that the Lakers have to focus on and can therefore address with other moves beyond him. So I again don't think he's going to be back. But if he is and he plays well, the Lakers are going to be pretty damn dangerous, at least in the regular season. And then maybe at the trade deadline, they part ways and bring in somebody that they feel a little bit more confident in the playoff setting. But until then, this is this is not an easy decision to make, and it's not one that I think has been fully made quite yet. I do think the Lakers are open to Russell returning, but it's really hard to ignore the amount of noise that I've heard that points to Russell not being a Laker next year. All right, that is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lowdown Podcast. Again, apologies for the way things went down here, but thank you guys for the questions. Again, if you want a question answered, if you want any topic whatsoever covered here on the show, send it in the form of a 5-star review, and I guarantee that I will get to it. Again, thank you. This is 35 minutes worth of me answering your guys' questions, and this would not have been able to take place without your guys' input. So let's keep that train rolling right on into this offseason. So until tomorrow, or until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm Anthony Irwin, saying have a good one.